The world of nonprofits is undergoing dramatic change, and it isn't tied to technology. Part of it may be a natural evolution, but the current political climate is also having an effect. The NAACP, for one, has twice in the last year initiated a major shakeup as part of a promised, quote, system-wide refresh to try to keep up with the wants and needs of its members. The group has announced it's changing from a 501c3 status to a 501c4. To explain how nonprofits are fighting to stay relevant and how becoming more politically active could affect that, I'm joined by Robert Ashcraft, Executive Director of ASU's Lodestar Center for Philanthropy and Nonprofit Innovation. Robert, why would a group go from 501c3 to 501c4 designation? What changes, or what does an organization think will change?
Well, so the lion's share of nonprofits are within the IRS category of the 501c3, the charitable, the human service, the education kind of organizations. The C4 is a lesser known, lesser used designation. It actually is an interesting designation because there are what you might call well-known community civic organizations that are actually C4s, Rotary Clubs, Kiwanis Clubs, and that kind of thing. But C4s also allow a way in which a nonprofit can get more engaged in elections and the world of advocacy lobbying by certain thresholds, like the expenditure of dollars off their budget, which has a higher threshold than the C3s. To give some context, if you pull the lens back to the country, and this varies depending on when data are collected, there's roughly 1.5 million nonprofits of all tax-exempt category, of which there's 29 tax-exempt categories. The C3 is the largest. Less than 100,000 of those are C4s out of 1.5 million. So we're talking a niche, but it's an important niche.
So what's the misperception about the 501c3s? It seems as though that if you go to C4, that means, well, we really need to get politically active, but it doesn't mean you can't be politically active as a C3.
That's most correct. You know, in our center's work, we respond to frequently asked questions, or people just have these issues, they come up. This has to be one of the biggest myths, I think, that we deal with every day, which is to say that I'm a 501c3 and therefore I can't get involved at all in advocacy lobbying work. Mm-hmm. That's patently not true. You can get actually very involved. It has to do with the substantial nature of your expenses on such activity. And the IRS, based on your budget size, has different thresholds that would cap out at about 20% of your budget if you're less than $250,000 budget. The one, dare I say, no-no for the C3 would be to actively campaign for an individual for office, to go out publicly in such a mode where you're declarative about who that candidate is and that you're behind it. That would not be something a C3 would do, but being very active in the legislative process, actually going out for or against propositions, being very involved, in our case, in the state legislature, testifying within your area of expertise, all driven by your mission and purpose. It has to align with the reason for your being. You wouldn't weigh in on areas that's not within your mission.
Is there a perception danger of going C4, the feeling that maybe those who've been with you for a while are thinking, okay, this seems to be maybe a reprioritization? I mean, can certain people or can certain groups become less comfortable because of that?
That's a great question. Typically, what will happen is you might see a C3, C4 within the same organization. AARP might be an example. The NRA would be an example. Nationally, the organization Common Cause has a C3 and a C4. So they have an educational charitable mission, but then they have their C4, which doesn't allow tax deductibility of your donation. There can be other issues that separate it from the C3, but that's a vehicle by which you can be declarative, very engaged in election processes and so on. But at the same time, you have another swim lane. I think of these, Steve, as it's almost like muscles that nonprofits can use to evince their mission. And in this day and age, you know, more are starting to flex muscles around causes, care, concern of issues that are very important to them. And you can't ignore the legislative process, the electoral process in that regard.
Your point about a major organization having the C3 and C4 components is really fascinating. Is that something we're going to see more and more of, do you think?
Yes, maybe more C4s within an umbrella, a rubric that would be a mission-driven nonprofit that would also have a C3. But the other thing we're seeing is the evolution of networks, where rather than my nonprofit creating a C4, I would join a network of aligned and kindred spirits of nonprofits that then would get involved, and they may be the C4. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm,
there would be this way in which you organize. Now, it's all about purpose and mission driven. I think the other thing that's rather interesting, some are suggesting that this is a new phenomenon, that somehow, because of all the political rhetoric and the other things we see, the polarization that seems to be happening in communities and across the country, indeed the world, that somehow this activism is a new thing and we're searching for this right way to organize. But actually, the nonprofit sector, that was what it was about when it grew and became what it is in the United States. It's a foundational part of a functioning democracy. People organize around issues and the care and concern they have for causes and what it is that is their particular passion. Mm-hmm. What gets interesting is what your passion may be may not be my passion. Mm-hmm. In fact, we may be diametrically opposed in position and so on. Yet we both create a nonprofit form. And some people, you know, it just depends which side of the issue you may be on. You may say, well, there's more activism going on because it's something that you're on a different issue, right? Okay. But I'm not sure that's the case as we look at the history of this social sector, this nonprofit sector in the United States.
Philosophically, is there enough money out there that people are willing to give? And does that put organizations in a rough spot to say, you know, there is only so much money to go around, so we may not want to step on toes, for example?
Yeah. We live in a world of abundance as much as we live in a world of non-abundance. Philanthropy, if we're talking just about fundraising and philanthropy, is still a roundoff error given all government funding at all levels. So it begs the question about, therefore, what would the role be for the nonprofits that are fundraising and trying to capture some of the philanthropic dollar? And then the issues do come in about, are there metrics and results that they can measure and show? Are they able to communicate to donors in such a way to inspire confidence and continued donations? Those that fall short and haven't stayed current and relevant of their mission, right, then one could argue they really shouldn't be around necessarily. It's that messiness we've talked about earlier. Is there duplication? Yes. Are there inefficiencies? Absolutely. But who wants to say to a group of citizens that your idea is not worthy of organizing around? And that's this push-pull, give-take about this nonprofit philanthropic sector.
Robert Ashcraft is executive director of ASU's Lodestar Center for Philanthropy and Nonprofit Innovation.